I want you to call to mind someone you know really well. Like really, really, really well. Maybe it's a spouse, maybe it's a friend, maybe it's just someone you happen to know really well. Bring them to mind. What characteristics, what things come to mind? My guess is you would know this person so well that if you surprised them, you'd know exactly how they react. If you were to pick a gift, you'd know exactly what gift to give this person and how they'd react. Or conversely, if you wanted to mess with them, you could give them a really weird gift and know exactly how they would respond. You'd know in every situation what this person is going to do, for the most part. And every so often, there's little things that may surprise you. Things that seem out of character or strange. And as soon as you notice those, because you know this person very, very well, you'd be like, what's wrong with you? Are you okay? Is there something wrong? Can I help you? This is what happens when we know someone so very well. We know the ins and outs of them. We know what's good and bad. We know when things are off. Well, interestingly enough, God wants us to be the same way. He wants us to know him so well that we know how he acts, what he does, what's going on, when it's not him. And he does this in a very particular way. He repeats himself. He does things time and time again that each iteration would be the same. Here's some examples. During the Easter events that we celebrate now, we see this reiteration, this repetition of what he does. The first time the disciples encounter the risen Lord was in the upper room. This really shouldn't surprise us. These guys had been following with him for 3 years. They knew him well. The most intimate and special moment they shared was in that upper room. The Last Supper, the Passover, the moment he handed on the bread and the wine, his body and blood to them, this last moment before he went to his death. So it's not a surprise that you find them up there, taking comfort, trying to support each other as they're dealing with the fact that Jesus is dead, and now there's reports that he's still alive somehow. So here they are, huddled in the upper room, and that's where Jesus appears. He appears where they know him, where they would recognize him, where they would understand. He does it twice, not just once, twice, in this very special intimate setting. He appears to them to connect what he did at the Last Supper to what he's doing in the resurrection. He gave over his body and blood in the Last Supper. He does it again in the breaking of the bread in the upper room, connecting all these events so they see this is the same person. This is the Lord risen from the dead. But that's not enough. He does it twice more. After they had these upper room events, where does he appear? The Sea of Tiberias, or the Sea of Galilee, or the Lake of Galilee. It has lots of names. Regardless, he appears there. Why? Because that was also a very important moment for them. Not only are they bored and not know what else to do, so as fishermen they go fishing, but if we go back to the beginning of the gospel, this is where he called them. Recall, Jesus was walking along the shore of the sea, and he saw some fishermen, and he said to them, "How's the fishing going?" I'm paraphrasing. And they say, "Not well." And he says, "Cast it over on the other side, and you'll catch a fish." So they caught a bunch of fish, they came ashore, and he said to them, "Follow me." And they followed after him. So it's logical that he would appear to the same spot and do the exact same thing. They didn't catch anything, try the other side, which really shouldn't work, but they do it, and they catch a whole bunch of fish, and they know it is the Lord. Now the surprising detail is, they don't have to ask. They don't ask him who he is. They know it. They know it with a profoundness because that's connected to their first call. And they're not surprised when he says, "Follow me." Connecting all these things together that they may know it's truly the Lord. Well, the third event happened much later. Jesus was there and appeared to 5,000 people. Where do you expect? The Mount of Beatitudes. The place where he fed the 5,000. The place where he gave the law, reiterating what had happened before. Here he had shown them what he can do. "I will feed the multitudes with what seems like nothing. I will teach you the new law and inspire you in a new way. And now I'm coming back to iterate again. This is me. This was true. Follow after me." That's the point of him appearing and repeating himself again and again, that they may know these are the patterns, these are the places, this is true. But that's not the end of it. The Old Testament is full of it too. When Moses went up the mountain and got the law, the Ten Commandments, he comes down and they're worshiping the golden calf. At a fury, he throws them on the ground and they smash. But they're still there. He goes back up the mountain, repents after 40 days, writes them all for himself, comes back down the mountain. Then they can compare them. Did Moses just make up this law? Or is it truly God's law? Well, they can compare them and see. Oh, look, it's the same thing. Must be God's law. But God does this in many ways. with the rebuilding of the temple. The temple was rebuilt twice, to the exact same pattern each time. This was God's law. You don't change those things. So this repetition shows us something very profound about the nature of God. We always like to think of God as unbounded by things, infinite, completely able to do whatever he wants. Well, he does, but he chose one thing. He binds himself to truth and the fact of who he is by making these things true. God bound himself that we may know him for as he is. Because God's not going to say one truth here and one truth over there, then it's not true at all. He's going to repeat himself because that's what's actually true. And that confines him enough that we can come to know him. We can come to realize what he does. And we see that by God acting as he does and doing it the same every time. A beautiful thing in our relationship with him. Therefore, we know what is God and what is not. But we can go even further than this. This is where things get fun. Because as we venture into the Easter mysteries, Jesus did something that's so immensely strange. Let me give you an example by comparing two religions. Let's start with Buddhism. Siddhartha, the first Buddha, when he was about to die, and he knew he was going to die, he called all his disciples to himself and gave them three commandments. The first one is, you shall make a pilgrimage to the place where I was born. Second one, you'll make a pilgrimage to the place where I'm going to die. Third one, you'll make a pilgrimage to the place where I achieved enlightenment. So he wanted his disciples to go to these pivotal places where they felt his presence and would be able to continue Buddhism from there. Similarly, Muhammad, when he was about to die, he called his disciples to himself, founding Islam or reforming it, depending on how you look at that scenario, and he said, three commandments. I want you to make a pilgrimage to where I was born, where I died, ascended, and where I found the Quran. So they make a pilgrimage. Jesus didn't ask that of us. He didn't ask a pilgrimage. He didn't ask us to go to his place of birth, his place of death, important moments. That's where the disciples congregated. They just happened to be there. They were there, and Jesus made himself clear to them. But he wasn't requiring them to go there. Neither does he require it of us. Instead, he has a very different point. And this is something very important to us. He's everywhere. We can encounter him absolutely everywhere. But where he prominently shows himself to make all the connections very clear is in the breaking of the bread, the Mass. He left this memorial, this standard form of worship, that we may know the Lord is risen, that we may see him time and time again and recognize his presence is everywhere. And that's important for us because we have those pivotal moments in our lives too, much like the disciples. The upper room, the Sea of Galilee, the Mount of Beatitudes. We have these pivotal moments in our lives where we encounter God in a true and profound way. In that way, we have to keep hold of those things. Because then God will show himself again when something's more important and say, remember that? Now you know it's me. Because that's our goal. The goal of the Easter mysteries is to remind ourselves that God is still present. He's still alive in our world. He still comes to meet us and he shows himself. He's going to continue to show himself that we may come to know him, believe in him, and rejoice that the Lord is truly with us.